Thank you. Thanks, Graham. On behalf of my team at Montgomery Investment Management, Alan Kohler and the Eureka Report and Graham's Self-Managed Super Review, thank you very much for coming. And thank you personally for inviting me to come and speak. It is my delight to come and show you something of what I know about value investing. Just by show of hands, because I do require audience participation, I noticed when I walked in, it was very, very warm, and I thought, geez, it must be a very exciting day. Everyone's getting all hot and excited. I'm going to warm things up a little bit. I'd like you to participate, and I do that because many of you know that in 1996 in the United States, there was a study conducted by some scientists, and they worked out that attendees to workshops and seminars absorb and retain more information if they're awake. Right? So if you're participating, that would help. I'd like to see, show of hands, who owns shares at the moment? Okay, very good. Hands down. Who doesn't own shares at the moment? Anyone? Okay, and who's not going to put their hand up no matter what I ask? No, one person. Thank you for being honest. I need to give you a warning first, and the warning is this: any stock that I mention today could halve in price, it could go out of business, it could drop, you could lose all your money, and you've been warned. Hands up if you own Telstra. Right, very good, you've been warned. Okay, so I don't know your personal financial circumstances. I may own stocks that I mentioned today. If I do, I'll do my best to actually tell you that I do. In fact, if I mention any stocks that I think are great businesses and I own them, I'd be delighted if you rush out today and buy them. That would help me more than you, so you've been warned again. Finally, I simply am not in the business of predicting where the share market is going, and I don't know what share prices are going to do tomorrow, next week, next month, or next year. Valuing a business is very different to predicting the price of its shares. As you'll see shortly, in the short run, share price movement is based on a group of people, or share prices per se, are largely determined by a group of people who are neither emotionally stable nor intelligent. No one in this room, of course, but everybody else. Okay, Benjamin Graham said that, and I'm going to cite that quote shortly. What I'd like to do is I'd like to give you three steps for improving the performance of your portfolio if you're patient and invest over the long term. Now, some of you will immediately look at me and say, "Well, that's fine and dandy, Roger. You're 40 years old. I'm double your age, and I don't have the time to be patient, and I don't have the long term." Well, it doesn't matter what your age, the appropriate way to approach the stock market is the same. You have to approach it as if you're buying a business as opposed to a stock. You're buying a piece of a company. The stock market is not the place where we turn up every day and we bet on up or down. The stock market is a place where we can buy pieces of great businesses. And as many of you have experienced, it is also the place where you can buy terrible businesses. And in fact, I suspect many of your portfolios are dominated by such things. You all put your hands up and said you own Telstra. So what we're going to do is we're going to avoid bad companies. We're going to uncover what I think are A1 companies. We're going to talk about good businesses versus bad businesses. I'm going to show you some very quick steps to value a good business, and I'm going to do that in about 35 minutes. If you feel like asking a question, keep it brief. Because of my prior experience doing this, and I've done it for almost two decades now, I will not take opinions or statements. Okay, if you've got a statement to make or an opinion you want everyone to hear, you can come up here after my talk and you can make it. I will take questions. I'm delighted to take questions throughout. I just don't want to get into an argument because it's a very tight schedule today. Okay. By the way, happy to argue outside. Oh, and apparently Vanessa, is it right? I'm signing some books. Some of you, Emily, where are you, Emily? Emily organized a group of people to bring their books along. Hands up if you brought your book. Yeah, okay. Well, I'll sign them out the back. Okay, so don't bail me up at the end here. We'll go outside and I can sign them out there. Okay, so the amazing secret to investing in extraordinary businesses is this: avoid the bad ones. Okay, avoiding the bad ones is much easier than you think. and I'm going to show you how to do that. Some of you may have seen this before, but if you're new to this style of investing, value investing, then this will be new. I want you to imagine you're not an investor in the share market. I want you to imagine you own this business personally, and I run it for you. I'm the CEO, and you are the owner. Yeah. Apparently it's out of focus. Are you able to control it from up there? Maybe? Okay, we'll see how that goes. Sorry about that. I don't have any control of it at this up here. Okay, so if we're going to imagine it's the year 2000, we're going to start a business, and you're going to inject $2.862 million. Okay, $2.862 billion, $2,862 million. That's how much you're going to start. So you reach in, write out a check, and give it to me. And I'm going to go and run the business. Now, what I also do is with that collateral, I head down to the bank and I borrow $3.1 billion. See at the bottom there? $3.1 billion. So I'm going to borrow $3.1 billion on top of the $2.8 billion that you've put in, and we're going to run this business for a year. And at the end of the year, we generate a profit, or I generate a profit for you, of $517 million. Now, based on the equity that you put in, you've generated a return on equity of 17.5%. You can see that in the first column, 17.5%. Is that a good result, a fair result, a no good result? What do you think? It's a reasonably good result. Okay, it's a reasonably good result. You can't get that in a bank account. You can't get it in a term deposit. You certainly can't get it in an Advantage Saver account. Advantage Saver accounts are those accounts where you earn 0.1% interest, provided you don't make a withdrawal. And they're called Advantage Saver accounts because they're a big advantage for the bank. Now, delighted by the early results and the early success of this business, you decide to let me run the business for another 10 years. So I keep running it for about 10 years, and at the end of 10 years, I report to you a profit of $267 million, about half of what we earned in the first year. How do you feel about that, good or bad? Bad. We'll just keep it to good and bad. It's very black and white. Okay, good and bad. What if I also told you that in addition to the fact that the profit has gone down by almost half over that 10 years, you've had to tip in another $2.9 billion such that you've now invested $5.8 billion. Good or bad? Really bad or just bad? Really bad. And what if I told you that in addition to that, you've had to go to the bank and borrow another $2.4 billion, so you're now in hock to the bank to the tune of $5.5 billion. Bad, terrible, disastrous? Let me ask you, show of hands, would you be happy owning this business outright? Yes or no? No. Okay. Let me show you what this looks like. This, if we take this $250 million and we divide it by the additional money you've put in, we've discovered that for every dollar you've invested, you've lost 8.5%. So every dollar you've invested over the last 10 years has actually lost 8.5 cents in total over the 10 years. You could have done better putting your money in an Advantage Saver account. You could have done a lot better. So you've told me you wouldn't own this business. This is what it looks like on a chart, one of the few charts that I'm actually interested in. So there's the profit in 2000, the profit in 2010, sorry, that should be 2010, not 2009. The equity you started the business off with and what you've put in since, the debt that you kicked off the business with and how much you've borrowed since, and there's the return on equity over that time. Now, a quote from Warren Buffett. If you're not happy to own the whole business for 10 years, do not own a piece of it for 10 minutes. This is a business that you all know well. This is Qantas. These are the numbers from the annual report. You could see them there. They're plain as day. You can get them yourself, provided you know what to look for. So what is it that you need to look for? Well, you need to look for the equity, the change in equity, how much additional money you've put into the business, how the debt has changed, and what's happened to the profit. That's all you need to do. If you can do those three things, you can find out whether a business is a reasonable business, whether it has attractive economics or not. And here's the interesting thing I discovered. No one does it. No one actually does it. There's no point in actually doing this kind of analysis, if there's not a relationship between the performance of the business and the share price. Warren Buffett wouldn't have said that if there wasn't a relationship between the two. He wouldn't say, "Don't if you're not prepared to own the whole thing and you know that's going to be a disastrous experience, then don't own the shares," because if the shares doubled or tripled or quadrupled anyway, well, there'd be no relationship, no correlation. There's no point in doing the analysis. But there is a relationship, and Benjamin Graham said there was, even in the 1940s, when he said, and this is paraphrased by Warren Buffett a bit more recently, "In the short run, the market is a voting machine. In the short run, the stock market is a popularity contest. We take our cues from prices far too much. Come Monday morning, we want to find out how house auctions went. What's happened to Sydney house prices? When we listen to the news at night, we want to know what's happened to the All Ordinaries Index. When we listen to the news in the morning, we want to know what's happened to the Dow Jones. We want to know what things went up and down by. We're betting on up or down. We're taking our cues from prices, and we shouldn't be. We should be taking our cues from the performances of businesses. Because in the short run, you cannot predict what emotionally unstable and unintelligent people are going to do. Any research that comes out from major broking houses and major institutions that tries to study prices are ultimately trying to study irrational behaviour and emotional people's responses. And we've now come to what's called the third degree, where we now produce research that tries to predict irrationally what irrational people are going to do. And it all looks really, really sophisticated. And they blind you with science, and yet all you need to do is turn the stock market off and think about businesses, not stocks. Last year, I picked some stocks for Alan Kohler's Eureka Report. I picked some stocks for The Money Magazine. I picked some stocks for a whole bunch of different publications, and the performance of those stocks all trounced the market. And many of the businesses that we bought shares in went up 200, 300, 400%. Not because I'm a genius, because I'm not. Only because we bought good businesses at discounts to intrinsic value. And when I choose to buy businesses that aren't good, or I choose to buy businesses that are well above their intrinsic value, I've always found that my performance suffers. So that's all you need to do. Because in the long run, ladies and gentlemen, the stock market isn't a popularity contest. In the long run, the stock market tends to get it right. In the long run, price follows value. Have a look at this particular chart of Qantas over 10 years. The horizontal step line that you can see, that is the intrinsic value at that particular year, for or at my estimate of intrinsic value for Qantas at that time, plotted against the share price, which is the orange chart that you can see. And what you can see is that the intrinsic value of Qantas has not changed in a decade. It is worth no more than it was worth 10 years ago. And surprise, surprise, the share price is less than it was 10 years ago. In fact, the market capitalization of Qantas today is less, so the total price of the company on the stock market is less than all the money that has been put in and left in the company. This is not a business that you want to own, and three pieces of information is all that you need to work it out. Okay, here's another mystery business. A business in 2004 that earned almost $4 billion. In 2011, it's forecast to earn less. Here's the equity that was put in the business in 2004, and there's now less equity in the business. Now, the reason there's less equity is because this particular company paid more in dividends than it earned in profits. So the equity went down. And to fund that increase in dividends, the debt went up. So if you look at this particular chart, all that's happened is there's been a debt for equity swap. The debt has replaced the equity, and that's helped to keep the dividend up. And by keeping the dividend up, hopefully the share price would stay up and the CEO would get their bonus and they'd get there and they'd ride off into the sunset. And I'm giving you a clue as to what this company is. They rode a donkey, not a horse. There is the change in return on equity over the period, and there's the company. And here is the intrinsic value of Telstra going back to 2001, and once again you can see there has been no change in the intrinsic value, which is based on the performance of the company, for 10 years. It took over 10 years for the price to finally catch up to the value, and that might be because it is so widely held by both private investors and institutional investors. But eventually, Benjamin Graham is right. Eventually, price catches up with value. In the long run, the market is a weighing machine. Again, you only need three pieces of information. So when somebody tells you here, that it's got a really good dividend yield, or here that it's got a really good dividend yield. What you care about is not the dividend yield. What you care about is the intrinsic value of the company, because it's no good getting a fully franked dividend if you're losing money. We do that in property all the time and we think it's smart. You know, that's what negative gearing is. How to go broke saving money. Okay. Part two. That's the first thing I wanted to talk to you about. So stay away from bad businesses. What does an A1 business look like? What's a high quality business look like? Well, before I show you, let me talk about some of the things that Warren Buffett said that you should look for. He said this: you want an easily understandable business whose earnings are virtually certain to be materially higher 5, 10, 20 years from now. Just before arriving here this morning, the ABC camera crew turned up at my office for the midday news today, and Rothschild asked me some questions about the tsunami and the earthquake in Japan. It is one of the saddest and most heartbreaking things I think I've ever seen on television. But the reality is that in 5 years' time, we will look back on it as a distant but very, very sad memory. Everyone's focus right now is what companies are going to make money, what companies are going to lose money from this event. In 5 years' time, we'll be thinking about some other catastrophe, and it won't be this one. So we need to ask ourselves, we need to stand back from all the noise, stand back from all the knee-jerk reactions that are going on right now, and we ask ourselves, will this business earn more in 5, 10, 20 years from now? And if you aren't certain about that, then you shouldn't be investing in the shares of that company. Number two, businesses earning good rates of return on equity while employing little or no debt. Return on equity for me is the single most important ratio to look at in terms of assessing the performance of a business. I want businesses with high rates of return on equity, not low rates of return on equity, and I want businesses that are increasing or have stable rates of return on equity, not return on equities that are declining. With regards to little or no debt, if you were to ask me, as someone did to Charlie Munger once, what do you mean by little or no debt? My response would be, what don't you understand about no debt? There are no shortage of wonderful businesses or extraordinary businesses in Australia that have little or no debt. And the third thing that we're looking for are bright long-term prospects. Bright long-term prospects for intrinsic value. I can't see how you can determine whether or not Telstra has bright long-term prospects or not. When it loses its monopoly power over the network and it becomes a retail seller and a wholesale seller of broadband or bandwidth, I don't know how you can work out how much it's going to earn. So I don't know how you can work out whether it's got bright prospects or not. Okay, here's a business you may have heard of, a company called Forge. It's a pick and shovel supplier to the resource industry. It won't always have bright prospects. This is not a business that you would put in the bottom drawer and leave forever. It is operationally leveraged. It will enjoy the good times and make a lot of money, but when it gets quiet, it will find that it's capital intensive or labour intensive, one or the other, and as a result, its profits can swing very dramatically to a loss quite quickly. Having said that, that doesn't appear to be the case in the foreseeable future. Remember, I own the stock, so don't rush out and buy it. Do your own research. Go and seek personal professional advice. So we've got profit growing. Imagine again, put on your owner hat. You own this business outright. Profit first year, $2.6 million. Profit 3 or 4 years later, $38 million. Would you be happy with that result? Yes, okay, you would be. You put in equity, though, of $14.9 million. You've now tipped in another $78 million. So you've actually increased the equity in order to generate that result. Is that good or bad? You might be thinking it's bad. But have a look at the next line over on the last column. Every dollar that you've put in this business has generated a 45% return. Because you've increased the amount of equity in the business by $78 million, you've written out checks for another $78 million, but that additional $78 million has generated an increase in profit of $35 million. So you've generated 45%. And yes, the debt has gone up slightly, but it's immaterial compared to the equity in the business. What does this look like? This is the ratio, by the way, I think is key, return on equity. What does this actually look like on a chart? Quite different to the charts that I've shown you so far. There's the profit in 2007 and the profit forecast for 2011. There's the equity that was put in 2007 and the equity in 2011. There's the borrowings 4 years ago and the borrowings now. And there's the return on equity. And it's that grey line that I'm really, really keen on watching. And I think that's the line that you should be watching closely as well. It's the only chart that matters to me. Okay. Now, if we remember Graham's weighing machine idea and we plot intrinsic value for this business compared to price, what we're seeing is, as Benjamin Graham predicted, the price might go sideways for quite some time. And you can see for 2 years, the price of Forge actually did nothing despite the fact that the intrinsic value for the company was rising. As I say to you, I can't predict share prices. Share prices could move sideways for quite some time. In fact, I would be delighted if in my fund we underperform for 6 or 12 months because it would mean that the things we want to buy aren't racing away from us. As Mae West said, too much of a good thing is wonderful. I hope that the prices of the things I want to buy don't go up. And so if I'm buying shares and they don't go up, that means I have the opportunity to buy more. But eventually, as Ben Graham suggested, price does catch up with value. What I'm going to do now, that's the last thing I wanted to talk about. In terms of quality of businesses, that's what I wanted to talk to you about today. Avoid the bad ones, stick with the good ones. There's only three ratios, really, or three numbers that you need to look at. Now what I'd like to do is I'd like to take you through the process of valuing a business. But before I do that, I'm going to talk about something very, very controversial for this audience. And it is your amorous infatuation with dividends. I accept that you need to eat. I would suggest that some of you need to eat less. I also need to eat. But the value of the dividends that you receive from some companies may be less than you think. And what I'd like to suggest is that there may be more value for good businesses to actually retain their profits rather than pay them to you in dividends. And let me demonstrate now. The example over on the left-hand side, I've got 10 years running from top to bottom. The example company on the left-hand side is a company that earns a 20% return on equity on $100 of beginning equity, and the same for the company on the right-hand side. The difference between the left and the right-hand side companies is this. The left-hand side company pays no dividends at all. The right-hand side company pays all of its earnings out as a dividend to you. It can be fully franked if you like. It's not going to make that much difference. Have a look at what happens to the equity down the bottom. The equity for the company that pays all of its earnings out as a dividend doesn't change. The equity remains at $100. The equity on the left-hand side grows fivefold because of the compounding effect of the retained profits. But it only applies to companies that are able to generate 20% returns on equity. Why is this important? Because my valuation approach and the way Warren Buffett has always described valuing companies is based on a multiple of the equity and the profitability of that equity. So if you've got $1 in a jar, imagine I've got a glass here with $1 in it and it's generating 20% every year. And it keeps all of that money in there. It doesn't pay any of it out as a dividend. And we've got another business over here, another jar with a dollar in it. And it generates 20% and it pays all of it out as a dividend. Which one will be worth more intuitively? The one on the left-hand side of my left hand, the one that retained all the profits, will be worth more. Why? What are you going to do with the dividends? You're going to put them in that Advantage Saver account. Yeah? Or you're going to eat too much. Whereas the company that's earning 20%, you don't want any dividends from that company. You actually don't want the dividends. If the company says, I want to pay you a dividend, you'd rather say, no, you keep it. Because I can't get 20%. Now, some of you are saying, well, where am I going to get my dividends from? From another company. From the shares of another company. Alternatively, if you think about 1967, there was a company in the United States. 1964, you could have bought shares in this particular company at $14 each. In 1967, the chairman of that particular company decided to pay a dividend of 10 cents, and the shares were trading at about $18. With that 10 cent dividend came a letter to shareholders, and the letter said, this will be your first and final dividend. you will not be getting any more dividends. If you'd gone and sought personal professional advice, I suspect your advisor might have said sell the shares. Well, that's a shame because they're currently trading at $137,000 each. And that's Berkshire Hathaway, the company run by Warren Buffett. So all he did was the left-hand column. Earned 20%, kept the money, and kept getting 20%. Now, not every manager of a company can do that. And so I agree with you that there are grandiose plans and aspirations held by management in Australia, and in those cases, you should get the dividends. You don't want them to keep the money. Okay, let's have a look at how that looks on a chart. Here's a company. Here's the equity of a business that earns 20%, pays out nothing. The equity grows at 20%. Here is the equity of a business that earns 20%, pays out 50% as a dividend, which is very common in Australia. So the equity is going to grow at 10%. And the final example, that is an example of a company that earns 20% but pays out 80% of its earnings as a dividend. Now, I'm not suggesting that you don't invest in that third company. Maybe you do. What I'm suggesting is it's worth less. You wouldn't pay as much for the third company as the first company. JB Hi-Fi, The Reject Shop are companies whose offering is now starting to mature. I can see their return on equity plateauing. I can see their growth in equity starting to slow. And that's why nearly a year ago, I suggested that I could see that happening and that their value was starting to decline, if not flatten out. Now, the share price continued to go up after I wrote those articles. But the share price today is lower. Okay. Here is an example of a company that has grown its equity from 2006 from 45 cents per share in 2010 to 57 cents. And I've put a Buffett quote at the top there. What you want is big equity and big returns on equity. So here's a business that's been able to grow its equity and also increase its return on equity. Have a look recently at what's happening to its intrinsic value. It's going up. Here's a business. Oh, by the way, that company's Oriton. Here's a business. No, don't rush out and buy it. Okay, seek personal professional advice. Here's a company called Amcor. Have a look at what's happened to its equity over the last 10 years. Its return on equity has been stable, its equity hasn't grown, and look at the share price compared to 10 years ago and have a look at the intrinsic value compared to 10 years ago. Basically, very little change. And by the way, for those of you who want to say, yes, but what about the shares I got for the demerger of Paperlinx? That was before this chart started. Okay. All right, so I'm going. That's the third thing I wanted to talk to you about, the importance of growing equity where a company is generating high rates of return on equity. And the final thing I wanted to do is I wanted to show you a very quick way of valuing companies. Now, in all honesty, I would love the opportunity to stand up here for the next 2 hours and explain this in detail. But we don't have that time. There are a lot of other valuable speakers who are going to get up and talk about the things that they know that they can help you with. So I've only got a very short time to do this. If this goes too quickly for you, then I would be delighted for you to purchase one of the final books that we've got left, one of the remaining copies. And if you don't have a copy of Valuable, you can purchase it today and I'll do something special for you. I don't know what that is, Vanessa. I'm reluctant to actually offer anything because I know you're going to hurt me when I get back to the office. Okay, so here is the incredibly simple way to buy really good businesses for less than they're worth. There's four things that we actually need to conduct this particular calculation. We need to know the equity per share. So we want to know what the equity is on a per share basis. The equity is that part of the balance sheet that represents what we've put in and what we've left in as owners of the business. We need to know the payout ratio, what proportion of the profits are actually paid out as a dividend, in this case, close enough to 70%. We want to know what the return on equity is, and this is an estimate of what we think the future is going to be. So I'm estimating that for this company, return on equity will be 27%. And what return do I want for my investment after tax? I want to get a return of about 10%, which is 15% before tax at the corporate tax rate. Now, of course, you could use a higher rate, but be careful, and I warn you, those of you who frequent or lurk around my blog and who are valuing companies, you're not making an investment safer by using a higher rate required return. If a company If you're uncertain about a company's future, if it's in a risky space, a fast-changing industry, or in a commodity-type business which is cyclical, then using a higher required return does not make the investment any safer. Okay, so I'm going to use 10% for this example. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to divide the valuation up into two parts. I'm going to value the income component, the bit that's paid out as a dividend, which is the 69.7% part, the second cell you can see there. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the 10%. This is a table from my book. I'm going to take the 10% heading there, which is the required return that I want, and the 27.5% return on equity. I'm going to assume 27.5% return on equity for this business going forward. Now, if you think about it, if I've got a glass with a dollar in it and it's earning 27.5% a year and it's paying it all out as a dividend and I'm happy with a 10% return, then what can I pay for that dollar? I can pay $2.75. If I buy 27.5 cents for $2.75, so I buy 27.5 cents of earnings for $2.75, I'm going to get a 10% return, which is the top of the top heading there, the top of that column. So I take 10% and 27.5%. I'm going to multiply the equity by that amount there, the part of the equity that pays out dividends. And this is the part that retains and compounds. So I'm going to again take the 10% column and the 27.5% row, the 10% column, 27.5% row. This time the multiplier is 6.177. And then what I do is I simply multiply the $6.15 of equity by 275 to give me $16.91. And $6.15 of equity by 6.177 from the table to give me $37.99. I've just conducted two valuations. The top valuation is what, and this particular company, by the way, is Woolworths. The top valuation, that is what Woolworths would be worth. That is what I would be willing to pay less than, a lot less than, if all of Woolworths' earnings were paid out as a dividend. So if it kept earning 27.5% return on equity and it paid 100% of its earnings out as a dividend, forever and a day, I'd be willing to pay no more than $16.91. If I go to the bottom, I get $37.99. That's what I'd be willing to pay less than for Woolworths if it maintained all the profit. It kept getting 27.5% returns on equity and it paid no dividends at all. But we know neither of those things are true, are they? What percentage did it pay out as a dividend roughly? 70%? So if we multiply the top equation by 70% and the bottom equation by 30% and we add the two amounts together, we end up with a valuation for Woolworths of $23.30. So if I was going to buy Woolworths, I'd want to be paying less than $23.30 based on those numbers and that calculation. Here is Woolworths' share price over the last 10 years. And there's its intrinsic value. And let me say, the more bad news that comes out about Woolworths, the more negative press about the company, and the more positive press about Coles, the better for those of you who want to buy Woolworths. Hopefully the share price goes down a lot. As somebody once said, buy shares like you buy groceries, not like you buy diamonds. Okay, here are five A1 businesses, and this is my last slide, Graham. I'm feeling the pressure. Here are five A1 businesses that are worthy of further research. I've put in their ASX code, their what we call the MQR, the Montgomery Quality Rating, and also whether they're at a premium or a discount to intrinsic value, margin of safety. For all of these examples, I'm sorry, I can't control prices at the moment, but margin of safety is negative for these companies. That means their share prices currently are at premiums to their intrinsic values. But you're welcome to write those names down and go and conduct further research. I know you're disappointed that I've just taken those names away, so I could feel it. People are going, oh, Rog, I can't believe you did that. Okay, so here they are again. I'll finish up there. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. I hope you learn a lot today. I hope it becomes an incredibly, pardon the pun, valuable day for you, and I look forward to signing some books outside during the break. Thanks again for your time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Okay, do we have... do I need to ask a question? Do we have any questions for Roger?
Oh, how about we take one? Who's got a question that they're just... Here we go. We'll take that one.
Hello?
Hello?
Just a quick question. How often do you actually revalue the stocks? I mean, you've just mentioned...
Sorry, could you put your hand up? Who's speaking?
Sorry.
Oh, sorry, there you are. Sorry, I thought the went up there. Yep, there you go.
I grabbed the mic on the way.
Sorry.
So how often... Obviously, there are two reports a year or two updates. Are they sufficient or...
No.
Do you, all right.
No,
so
they're not.
What does a poor punter do?
Okay. Well, no one here is a poor punter, by the way. That's your term, not mine. You're all value investing experts now.
Yes, excuse.
After that session. And I like to refer to people who've read my book as valuable graduates. Look, the reality is that, yes, companies update, they announce a half-yearly result and they announce a full-year result. But in between those times, they make announcements about acquisitions, divestments, buybacks, share issues, placements, all sorts of different things that are going to affect the value of a company. So it's important that you're following that information as well. Now, I actually follow every single listed company in Australia and every announcement that they make, and it's a really expensive exercise. But I feel I have to do that in order to be able to make sure that I'm looking at opportunities quickly. You're not going to be able to do that. So what you can do is you can actually run a scan on ComSec or a scan on E-Trade and simply look for companies with high rates of return on equity, little or no debt, and reduce the universe of companies that you actually look at. There are other ways you can do it. Martin Roth has a book called Top Stocks, I think. It comes out once a year. That's not bad. That's got a lot of good companies in it. And there's a book that comes out by Morningstar called The Shareholder Compendium. And that some of that data, some people...